Hello, you're watching Talking Europe. Now, many of you will have seen our series of reports on levelling up in the EU. They've been a staple feature of our European output for the last 3 years. Today, we're speaking to the person who oversees those policies at the EU Commission. Elisa Ferreira is in charge of cohesion and reforms in the current administration of Ursula von der Leyen. She's been in the job since 2019. Previously, she was an MEP for the European Socialists, a vice governor of the Bank of Portugal and a minister in the Portuguese government in the late 1990s. Commissioner Ferreira, thank you for being my guest. You recently authored co-authored an op-ed with your colleague Nicholas Schmidt, which is called Cohesion is More Than a Policy, It's the Guiding Principle to Strengthen and Unite. And you also say cohesion policy is needed more than ever. Why did you feel the need to say this right now?
Well, in fact, thank you very much for your interest. In fact, it is important sometimes to make the role, to make visible the role that cohesion policy is doing. And in fact, the cohesion policy is, some call it, I'm quoting someone, the glue that keeps Europe together. In fact, we are in an open market. This open market is subject to new challenges. Of course, COVID was one of them. The Russian invasion of Ukraine was another one. But in spite of that, or on top of that, you have always things happening. And even the internal market, when we talk about greening, when you talk about climate change, there are asymmetric impacts. And so that people are not, some are the winners, others are the losers, it is cohesion policy that tries, in fact, to boost the conditions for growth of those that need some support in order to be able to create jobs and to create opportunities all over Europe and not only in the big developed centres.
So what about the timing of that statement? Because you've also said that defence spending in the next mandate, so the next EU mandate, should not come at the cost of helping poorer regions. Is this a response to some of the voices we've heard in the German CDU about prioritising defence spending? Are you worried that cohesion funding could actually suffer now?
I trust that we Europeans will be intelligent enough not to fragment Europe in such difficult times. And when we are talking about fragmenting Europe, if people in certain regions and countries feel that there is no place for them in a Europe that is more and more challenged by global forces, this creates a sense of rejection and it fragments Europe.
And on that sense of rejection, there's, of course, we saw increased share of the vote, particularly for the AfD in Germany and the National Rally in France. Is that a rejection of cohesion in some way?
No, I don't think so. It's a rejection of stagnation. What we find in the ninth cohesion report that I know that you have addressed and seen is what we find, and this was an academic work, was a certain correlation, so a relationship between those regions that stagnate for a long time, and they can stagnate at a high level of development, as a low level of development or in between. But if there is no progress, if people feel that the next generation will have a worse life than your own life, then people start doubting if there is place for them in this economy and in this Europe. And this is the one of the reasons, not the only one, of course. But then they start blaming people, blaming someone for this lack of future. So it is important, in fact, that we give a dimension of mutual support at these different levels, of course, with different intensities and, of course, with different instruments. Because in certain regions, you still need to solve roads or basic infrastructures. In other regions, you just need to help these regions to go through transitions. But this help, this solidarity across citizens and regions, that's what makes Europe a success project.
We'll talk about instruments in a bit, but first I want to go to our reporters, Luke Brown and Yoann Baudin, who have crisscrossed the continent to find out more about how cohesion funds are spent and the impact that they have. From Estonia to Spain, from Poland to France, we zoom in on priorities, including the green transition, fighting poverty and helping refugees. In 2024, the gap between the EU and its citizens has rarely seemed greater. But the EU's cohesion policy is a key tool in its fight against social exclusion. Across the 27 EU members, it aims to accelerate the digital revolution, facilitate the green transition, and reduce economic inequalities. From Spain to Estonia, Poland to France and Romania, we visited projects where cohesion funds are helping European citizens make a difference.
Without this money, I would never have been able to open a business like this here now. Before, the land here was simply a field of weeds.
Nista worked in France before returning to Romania to open this small business, thanks to a €25,000 subsidy from the European Social Fund Plus. Reversing the rural exodus from Romania's most impoverished regions is a key example of cohesion funding in action. But it's not only poor countries that benefit, but richer ones too, like here in France.
Julio has got a training program at a data center. Rudy has gone on to a training program for public green space maintenance. Well done to all of them.
This network of subsidized workshops in France has helped 20,000 people back from long-term unemployment over the past three decades.
Today, Europe helps us to better help you.
Europe plays a role in fighting hunger too. 12 million people across the EU still use food banks, and the EU funds one meal in four that's distributed, like here in Spain. Helping those in need is also about ensuring young migrants integrate into local communities. And it's about territorial cohesion with access to healthcare, like in this hospital straddling national frontiers in the Pyrenees. Faced with millions of Ukrainian refugees, the EU has set aside €17 billion in cohesion funds to help them integrate, like at this NGO which provides language classes in northern Poland. It's also a key actor in the green transition, which aims to make the EU carbon neutral by 2050. Here in Estonia, the EU's Just Transition Fund helps reskill workers from the oil shale industry, as well as providing €18 million for this electric vehicle battery plant.
It is important that we very quickly present to workers, present to people, to citizens, a prospect that immediately solves their problems.
Indeed, those solutions are needed across the EU. Here in Poland, regions once fueled by lignite coal have used EU funds to train former miners to install solar panels. From 2021 to 2027, the EU cohesion budget stood at €390 billion. That's the bloc's second biggest expenditure.
So, Commissioner, we saw poverty, of course, a key theme in that report. But if you look at the figures, we actually have a million more people living in poverty over the last 3 years because of inflation, COVID and energy costs. So does that mean your 2030 goals on poverty are in doubt now?
I don't think they are. And in fact, you are right to quote these figures. And one person that is unemployed or that is in poverty is a problem in itself. But if you take the full picture, you can easily confirm, I think, that after such a sequence of crises, the way we maintained jobs and the average level of well-being is almost a miracle. And the cohesion funds are directed to long-term convergence. But nevertheless, we decided with support of the European Parliament and the member states, in fact, we proposed and they accepted that under these dramatic, unexpected, unforeseeable circumstances that were caused by the COVID, when we were expecting to have a crisis like in the Second World War, that was, if you recall, that was the expectations we had. In fact, we allowed member states to use the funding exceptionally during a certain period to cope with the economic, social and health problems of COVID, then to accommodate the Ukrainian refugees. And with this, we managed to avoid this massive loss of jobs and the breaking up of society, because certain regions, if you think back, those regions that depended on tourism or on physical products like industry that have to import raw materials and export, they would have completely collapsed.
We also saw you in that report. Our reporters, of course, met you during one of their travels, and you said that we should be able to answer people's problems immediately. And that goes to the conclusions of the high-level report on the future of cohesion policy, which came out this February. And the conclusion which really struck me is it
says there should be greater local flexibility and a single set of rules for beneficiaries. So is it still too complicated to understand for people?
It is complicated. Of course, we have got to make sure that we know where the money goes, that we have instruments to prevent completely fraud and wrongdoing. We reach very high standards. Every year in terms of fraud, the level is, every period of funding, when we close the accounts, it's less than 1%, but nevertheless, whatever it is, it's bad. I think that's the likely evolution of cohesion policy, is to be simpler, but that requires also more capacity at regional level to explain, to make a right diagnosis, what is blocking their development. Because the purpose of the funds is not to create a permanent subsidy, is to create conditions not to need subsidies later on.
Just one final quick question. We're seeing the battle for the top jobs in the EU heating up now. Who would you like to see in these top three EU institutions?
Well, it's not very important what I think. I just would like to make sure that with all the results that we have from the parliament, that we have a pro-European, in the full sense of the word European, group of leaders that really managed to keep Europe together, that put cohesion at the center of the agenda, and at the same time prepare Europe to be strong, competitive, and to create well-paid jobs inside. And good businesses inside, so that in fact young people can have a good and prosperous life and have families if they so wish without leaving Europe. That's my hope.
All right, we'll end it there. Thank you so much, Commissioner Ferreira.
Thank you very much.
That's all for part one of Talking Europe. My colleague Douglas Herbert will be back with his panel of MEPs at the European Parliament.